WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, severe heat grips the South and Southwest. Phoenix, Arizona has had 18 straight days of temperatures over 110 degrees, tying the record. CBS's Astrid Martinez has the latest.
Tourists in California's Death Valley snap photos in the desert and next to a thermometer that climbs even higher into the triple digits.
We're getting lots of visitors who want to feel what it feels like to live in such an extreme place.
Millions of Americans are finding out firsthand, with excessive heat blanketing 14 states. From the west coast of Florida.
The Miami area issued its first ever excessive heat warning. Search and rescue teams outside of Philadelphia are searching for a young brother and sister who were swept away by floodwaters while the family was driving to a barbecue. KYW-TV's Marcella Bayetto reports from Washington Crossing.
Rescue teams are continuing their efforts to try to find those two missing siblings. Now, that includes a nine-month-old baby boy and his two-year-old sister. Now, there are five people that have lost their lives because of this intense flooding. This community has just been rallying with this family, really showing an outpouring of support for those involved.
Investigators are uncovering new evidence after arresting a suspected serial killer on New York's Long Island. CBS's Elaine Quijano has details about what police found inside his home.
Police say they found over 200 guns in a vault in the basement of accused serial killer Rex Huerman's Long Island home, and are executing search warrants at multiple nearby storage facilities looking for more evidence or trophies from his alleged victims.
Huerman has pleaded not guilty to the murders of three women. College students who are struggling with hunger are facing the potential loss of food stamp benefits. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
Some estimates say that at least 30% of college students are food insecure. The government relaxed SNAP requirements for those in college during the pandemic, and those getting the benefits had until June 30th to recertify and stay in the program. But the expanded eligibility will only last one more year. Experts say hunger among college students is rising due to inflation. Some schools have even gone as far as to create on-campus food pantries or lockers with food and toiletries. Matt Piper, CBS News.
The Powerball jackpot is an estimated $900 million tonight. Michael Vance bought tickets in Charlotte, North Carolina.
If I won the Powerball, I'd just pay off some bills and change my name and get missing for a while, honestly.
A judge temporarily blocks Iowa's new ban on abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, making them legal again for now. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds says she will fight all the way to the Iowa Supreme Court. This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
If you have unfiled taxes or are in debt to the IRS, this is important news. The IRS just rolled out a new program to help struggling taxpayers more easily resolve their tax problems. It's called the Taxpayer Relief Initiative, and it opens up powerful new options for people looking to get back on the right track with the IRS. And no one knows this program like the professionals at Optima Tax Relief, America's most trusted tax resolution company. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debt for their clients and have the expertise and experience to help you. One easy call to Optima can start the process, helping to put an end to your worries of wage garnishment, asset seizure, and other aggressive IRS actions. Make today the beginning of your fresh start with the IRS. Call the experts at Optima Tax Relief now for your free confidential consultation.
Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
It's time to turn Fridays into Fry-yays with WAUK.HalfOffDeal.com. You'll find deals for spots around town like restaurants, spas, and events. This Friday at 8 a.m., you'll save 50% on tickets to the Milwaukee Air and Water Show. July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach. That's right, save 50% on tickets for this year's Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd. The Milwaukee Air and Water Show continues to be Wisconsin's premier free family event of the the summer in one of the top air shows in the Midwest. Gates open up at 9 a.m. both days. Have a splash with the water show from 10 to 11:30. Be amazed with the air show at 12 p.m. and witness the Blue Angels around 3 p.m. For more details about the event, log on mkeairwatershow.com. Save 50%. See the show, the Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach.
Save this Friday at 8 a.m. at wauk.halfoffdeal.com.
That's wauk.halfoffdeal.com.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Don McCrude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Wisconsin's manner of funding local government is nearly singular in the country. That cheese stands alone, if you will. It hasn't been working in Milwaukee. It hasn't been working in Rhinelander. It hasn't been working in La Crosse, Green Bay, Madison, Kenosha, Racine. I don't care what you pick. It ain't working.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Monday through Friday at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cook, he need cut a game.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Native Roots Radio. I'm awake. Today, I get the honor to welcome back Minnesota State Representative Heather Keeler as our guest host. Passing the mic to you, Heather. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here. I love when Robert lets me take over the show because that means I get to build the content. I get to bring the people that I know are doing really good work in Minnesota, and we get to have conversations through education. I think the last time I was here, we had just wrapped up session, and it was like this quick, you know, I feel like quick overview of all these amazing things that we got to do. But one of the things that I have been really passionate about kind of back in my Indian education days was really educating and understanding sex trafficking and how that plays out in our communities and how often it's happening right in front of us and we don't even know it. I remember a story that sticks out and like I get emotional about it often in the work is that I had worked with this family for 7 years and this young lady graduated, went to college and she came back as a mentor and she sat there and she said, "Miss Heather, you didn't even catch the signs. I was being trafficked between after school and I was home every night for dinner." In my own community, this was somebody I sat and talked to on a regular basis and it was heart-wrenching for me. Also knowing that the work that I've done to end homelessness actually intertwines, you know, making sure that our youth have a safe space to live decreases the likelihood of some of these risks. And so I kind of wanted to bring light to how you take those stories from the streets, how you take the stories from these relationships with kids, and my work as a state representative. And so I've brought Samar with me. Hey, Samar.
Hello, everyone.
So Samar works with The Link. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what The Link is and what the services are, and then we'll get a little bit more into the other weeds of things?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. The Link does a whole lot of stuff, so I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. I know we're a little time limited. But we're a youth nonprofit organization, youth and adult-led nonprofit organization based in North Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we kind of have like three pockets of programming or what we call divisions there, one being Safe Harbor, which is my area of expertise. And then we have homeless. We have the homeless and housing division. So young people, we have about 260 units of housing for young people that are in need of apartments and things like that, some different types of housing styles. And then we also have a youth advocacy division, used to be called our juvenile justice division, but as we know, it's not always justice that's being provided. So the youth decided to change the name of that. And so those are kind of our three areas of expertise at the Link.
That's the coolest part, actually. So we have Homeless Day on the Hill. And if anybody knows, like, that's kind of the place where advocacy and these, you know, engaged youth or engaged individuals in Minnesota can intersect with your state representatives and the individuals that are making change. And so as a elected official who came in the pandemic, my first term, you know, I didn't get to experience this. And so Homeless Day on the Hill was in March this year. And it was like, if you ever know the arc of a session, like by March, legislators were tired. We've been working a lot, like we've been working our bills. And then, you know, people come to the Capitol and there's times when it feels like really magical because the work we do is connected then with the people that we do it for. And Homeless Day on the Hill was so cool. And the Link, like Samar was talking about there, you know, it's youth led really. And it was so cool to see this huge group not only join us, but then be like really engaged. And so Samar, talk a little bit about what that day was like and how maybe the youth felt being there in that time.
Yeah, those days are always really incredible. They're long days, but I think they're probably one of the most fun, not necessarily activities, but kind of days of advocacy that we get to do. The young people, we have 5 youth advisory boards at the Link, and you know, year round, they're working on policy changes. They're leading workshops, they're helping to hire and sit in on interviews and do all kind of cool things. And so when the session came around, they kind of really got to put that into practice and see what that felt like to walk into the Capitol. And not only, you know, to see who folks like you were, but to also, I think, really recognize the power that they had, I think was probably the coolest part. So we come pretty deep at the Link. We like to make sure all of our staff and our youth show up because there's power in numbers, you know, as we know. And people really like to listen to the young people, to the youth, to the kids, because those are, you know, that's the future. And I think who's mostly being impacted, but they have a blast. They make the work fun. You were awesome and gave us a tour that we were not expecting to have. And so they really thought that that was pretty cool. They think the world of Rep Keeler. but it was just an awesome day to see him testify and help out, yeah, you know, with some of that stuff. So
that was a fun day. And it was crazy because I had like meetings all afternoon and I came around the corner and y'all were standing outside the elevator. And I was like, we're going to go introduce you guys to some of the key people who played a role in getting that legislation passed, because, you know, the Youth Homeless Act was designed by kids. Youth, they were street, you know, outreach workers. And so I think the Link is just an example for other organizations too, that when you're doing this work, that you want to positively impact the youth, which as Indigenous people, we talk so much about 7 generations, that, you know, the key is to have the youth deeply involved and really helping to lead, you know, lead the ship on that. And so that was awesome. And then that night we had some of the youth were actually testifiers, in committee, you know, asking for funding. And we kind of joked around because I told one of the youth off, you know, like off to a side, I was like, so our mind frame going into this is we have to tell the story, sell the story, and basically like ask for all the money, right? And then they like really said that in spaces. But Samar, you work pretty close with the youth. What are some of the, like, what do they feel when they leave the Capitol and kind of go back into these spaces? Like, I know representation matters mm-hmm. and being there, but like, we try to humanize this work so that the youth can really understand that they lead this ship.
Yeah, I think they definitely felt empowered. I think they felt like, you know, being a part of something like that was more reachable than it, you know, seemed before they got to experience the Capitol and experience the tour and see each other testify. And, you know, so I think they felt like it was possible. And I think that's one of the key pieces to working with young people is opening up the door for them, you know, and helping them to experience all of these new things and build hope. Because with hope, I think, comes a lot of success, and they're very smart. So I think they felt empowered. They felt like they could create and make changes. They felt like they did create and make change. And that also, I think, extends to our staff at the Link too. A lot of us and some of our newer staff or younger staff had never been in the Capitol or experienced that either. So Yeah.
That's a good point. Like, I was never in the Capitol. I don't know if I told you that. Like, the first time I'd ever set foot in the Capitol was after I got elected, and I went for my, like, individual tour because we were in COVID, so you couldn't go with a group. And I remember, like, stepping on the floor for the first time. Like, this should not be the first time I'm here. Yeah. So I love that the kids come. And then we come out to y'all, too. Like, I came to one of your panels to see them doing this work. You know, these organizations don't just show up and say they do the work. Like, when you go out and check on them, you know, they're really invested in these relationships, and they really matter, and you become like invested in the work. So I appreciate the work you do, and I know Minnesota's better because of it. I know that we're about to go to break in a little bit. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about sex trafficking. I just want to give people a heads up that that's what we're going to be talking about. We know that this is something that is extremely difficult for some. We know that it impacts many Minnesotans. When we do the MCAs on in education, we know that we ask kids that are in 9th and 11th grade if they've ever experienced sex trafficking. And we know, you know, that it's anywhere between, you know, I won't give the data because sometimes that scares people, but it's like one kid is too many. And so we have the data, and we know that it's happening in Minnesota. I've had conversations with our Senator Tina Smith about bringing highlights to Minnesota around it, because we don't want to wait until it's too late to really invest in it. The one thing about Minnesota and safe harbor laws is that we actually created state statute to put a definition around what is sexually exploited youth. So that has helped us to set up ways to really fund these areas.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered Indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, this is Robert Pilot. I taught in St. Paul Public Schools for over 25 years, and I want you to join the team and make a difference in our children's future. Right now, St. Paul Public Schools is offering hiring and retention bonuses up to $10,000 for a variety of teaching and classroom support positions for the next school year. Grow in a supportive and fulfilling public school setting. Limited bonuses are available, so don't delay. Apply at spps.org/careers.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
The Meritee family of companies serves seniors and people with a wide range of disabilities. We provide home health care, hospice services, and accessible rental housing. This is Meritee, and we'd like you to join us. We're hiring direct care professionals, CNAs, nurses, and other support services. Our mission is to provide quality, personalized services to meet the unique and evolving needs of the people that we serve. Join a Minnesota family-owned company that was founded on a history of care. Apply today at MaryTinc.com/careers.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
And we're back. So going into this part of the segment, I do just want to give a heads up that we're going to be talking about signs and some stories and some real life stuff around sex trafficking. So I just always like to give people heads up about that. But one of the things that Minnesota has done is our safe harbor law actually protects youth from being arrested for prostitution in the state of Minnesota. In the past, some, you know, if a youth was involved in sex trafficking, it would end up being more of a criminal space for our youth. And we know that that's not the case. And in Minnesota, we've really made those changes to, you know, there's a way that you have to set up statutes so that you have the language to be able to make the changes. That's kind of what we just got done talking about. But the reason that the youth were at the Capitol is because we were working on getting funding for Safe Harbor. And Samar is the Safe Harbor Division Director over at The Link. And so, Samar, do you want to talk to us a little bit about what this funding will do and some of the expansion and ideas that we can really invest in the community to make an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the funding really goes to, you know, various programs that participate in Safe Harbor services and support. I think it really is going to help with things like, you know, building more shelter and housing opportunities for young people that need it, helping to hire on more staff and even increase the pay for some staff to do the work and continue the work and provide services and support. It'll also increase some of the services that come from the statewide approach. So, for example, the Safe Harbor Law kind of created what we call our regional navigators. There's 11 of those within the state of Minnesota, two of those being tribal navigators specifically. And so being able to maintain those navigators, which are 24, I kind of just identify them as 24/7 crisis lines, but being able to maintain those lines so that young people, no matter where they're potentially identified as, you know, a sexually exploited youth or a youth that's in need of some support, they're able to get that anytime, day or night. And so all of those things cost money, of course. And so that funding really helps to keep the boat moving. So, yeah.
Yeah, we talk a lot about how hard this work is and the longevity of, like, when people get into this work, you know, how long they stay or they go and they leave because of the uncertainty of the funding. And when you're so underfunded in these crisis, I call them the areas of love. Like, this is love work. Like, you show up because you love this work and you want to impact these kids. And it's not necessarily always about the money. But what we tried to do this year is really invest deeply, you know, so like Samar said, we can have individuals that do this work. But what we've seen is some of the best individuals in this work actually were youth that were being served at one point or utilizing the services. And so talk a little bit how The Link helps in that transition, you know, from being youth to then being a professional in this work.
Yeah, so I'll kind of start just maybe by telling you a little bit about what we do within our Safe Harbor division. So we do have 24/7 shelter for minors. We have housing programs. We have what we call supportive services, which includes that regional navigator line. But it also includes things like law enforcement victim support. It includes family support, mobile case management, aftercare, all of these different aspects that we've learned from young people are really important to have. We can't just have, you know, you come to shelter and then when you leave, you don't get any services. And so that it starts really when they come into the program. They get to lead their goal plans. They tell us, you know, what it is that they need. I mean, they've survived, honestly, already on their own. So they're good at quite a few things when they already come in. So one of the things that we try to do is help them kind of hone in on those skills. You know, what skills do you already have that apply to this work? You know, once they kind of move throughout programming, they can apply to be on one of our youth advisory boards. And through those youth advisory boards, they are paid staff. They are paid at the same rate as our youth specialists, our adult staff in our shelter programs and things like that. You know, we do things, like we said, public speaking and all of that good stuff. But the key to that is really helping them to figure out how do they process and talk about that work, right? I know I just went and talked about this at the Capitol, but how do I say this in an interview? So helping them kind of revise their resumes and practice their interview skills. And one of the things growing up when, you know, I was doing this work, nobody told me that. I was just doing and doing and doing. So that's one of the things that is really just kind of important is, like, they don't have a resume built. So how do we help them do that? And so getting them into positions of power, you know, whether that's, you know, going to the Capitol and things like that, or with, you know, the Minnesota Department of Health or DHS and things like that. So where can they actually make big decisions? And we just kind of help guide them through that process, try to introduce them to people that also share, you know, in those values and in their communities and being connected in those communities. So we've learned more recently that even though we serve up to the age of 25, so their 25th birthday, We have a lot of young people that have wanted to remain on those advisory boards and remain involved. So that's been a new kind of identifier. And we're trying to figure out how do we maintain this since they want to stay so involved. Yes. So it's been interesting. We've hired a lot of them on staff, too. So they're also doing things like working in our programs, whether they're doing front desk work or being a youth specialist and doing direct service themselves. All kind of stuff.
That's kind of cool. It's like that alumni mentality. Like they went through it and they're so proud of it that now they still want to stay involved. Well, that says a lot about what you guys are doing over there and like how you really embrace people holistically, which is, you know, we've been saying that forever. You can't just like give a kid a house and expect that they're going to be able to thrive and really teach them and give them the tools to be successful. So my hope is that as y'all do this, and this is happening all over the state, it's really happening all over the nation. Safe Harbor is something that happens not just in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but all over Minnesota and all over really the nation. But what I hope is that we're building up our youth in this way that then they become leaders who sit at the tables with me, you know, because we have really unique stories and we're seeing the shift in leaders who are coming from the industry of love. You know, we do have more social workers, individuals who have gone through the struggle of life that end up at these tables. And so, you know, the message kind of every time I come on, especially when I steal the show, is that, you know, it's you. It's people like you, Samar. It's people like the youth that we work with. It's the individuals who show up one day at the Capitol and feel ignited to get engaged is really how we make change. And so I hope that that message has been real clear in this example of how this works. But also let's kind of move into some of the signs. Like I had talked about the young lady that I'd worked with and she came back and my mind was blown that I had missed something as simple as she messaged me and said it was my lipstick. You know, they gave me lipstick to start wearing and I, you know, I learned these different things. And so what are some of the signs that for those of us who work with youth maybe just need to be a little bit more mindful of?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to start, I just want to make a little bit of a disclaimer that there's no single sign that's going to, you know, necessarily tell you that someone's been trafficked or not. And so just to be mindful of that, there's a lot of similarities, but every young person that comes into our program has a very unique and different situation. And it's hard. It's hard to identify. But there's a lot of ways that you can look. And part of that is building those relationships. So knowing, you know, the young people that are in front of you, also thinking about, you know, what perspective you're coming from. Are you looking at them as a parent? Are you a healthcare professional? What does that really look like? But it can be things, you know, from them being malnourished. It can be, you know, if you are a healthcare professional, for example, are you seeing, you know, abortion after abortion or STIs and kind of consistency in that? Some of it is just around, you know, are they making eye contact with you? Do they feel, you know, hesitant to make decisions? Are they able to speak without someone else in the room? Those kind of things. Some of it can be physical. You know, one of the signs that some traffickers mark kind of, you know, quote unquote, mark their territory. So looking at tattoos, you know, are youth coming to school or coming home with new jewelry and more money and, you know, new clothing, but you're like, where is this coming from? You don't have a job or your job isn't enough to pay for some of this. So it's really about knowing the young people that you're around and thinking about, you know, some of the changes that you might be seeing.
Yeah, some of the fear that I know that we've talked mm-hmm. about is especially youth that have maybe been in the foster care system or, you know, with the indigenous population in Minnesota, we're number one in the nation for removal of Native American children. And so you know, in the conversations that I've been a part of kind of peripherally is that that's a higher risk group of individuals and that housing them and giving them, you know, that safe place keeps them safer long term. And so you and I have talked a little bit about that, you know, that cross section of like if we house them, that keeps them safe as well. And so talk a little bit about the shelter component of that and how maneuvering from when they first get involved with you to then how we provide shelter for them.
Yeah, so just kind of going back, you know, the average age of entry into what a lot of people call the life or the lifestyle of prostitution or exploitation is 12 to 14 years old. And we're seeing a lot of young people come into our programs that simply don't have stability. They don't have a home to go back to, or that home is unsafe or uncomfortable. Maybe they've been kicked out, which you know, a lot of LGBTQ youth kind of have that particular situation happen where they're kicked out of the homes, and then they're more vulnerable outside. Nobody's necessarily wanting to hire them. There's just so many different ways. But I think housing and policy change is really what the link sees as kind of the foundation of change for sex trafficked youth. They need a safe place to be, a safe place to go, and a place to start. Nothing else is going to help if they don't have that.
That's true.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup starting at 6 AM. Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show on 540 AM WAUK.
CBS News Brief. In Phoenix, where it's over 110 degrees, the Salvation Army is providing essentials. Spokesman Scott Johnson.
It's life-saving. Some ice-cold water, a hat, some sunscreen. Anything like that is a lifeline for people in need that are living here out in these conditions.
No sign yet of a baby boy and his two-year-old sister. Their family's car was swept away in a flash flood in southeastern Pennsylvania on Saturday. A family spokesperson says of the search crews,
"Their compassion, kindness, and bravery have given us strength in this unspeakably difficult time. And their commitment to bringing Conrad and Matty home is unwavering."
Tonight's Powerball jackpot soars to $900 million. Drew Svitko with the Pennsylvania Lottery.
It is the cheapest entertainment $2 can buy. It's the ability to dream about what you will do and talk with your friends and neighbors and coworkers about all the things you could do with that much money.
Odds of winning are 1 in 292 million. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
It's the Max Inc. Radio Concert Series at the Waukesha County Fair, Thursday, July 20th on the Whammy and Guitars for Vet stage, featuring Ironplow, Karma Shotgun, and Talon. Music starts at 7:30, hosted by WAUK's Don Brown. The Waukesha County Fair on the Whammy and Guitars for Vet stage. Find more info at guitars4vets.org. Presented by WAUK 540 AM, The Shaw 101 FM, and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
It's time to turn Fridays into Fry-yays with WAUK.halfoffdeal.com. You'll find deals for spots around town like restaurants, spas, and events. This Friday at 8 a.m., you'll save 50% on tickets to the Milwaukee Air and Water Show. July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach. That's right, save 50% on tickets for this year's Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd. The Milwaukee Air and Water Show continues to be Wisconsin's premier free family event of the summer and one of the top air shows in the Midwest. Gates open up at 9 a.m. both days. Have a splash with the water show from 10 to 11:30. Be amazed with the air show at 12 p.m. and witness the Blue Angels around 3 p.m. For more details about the event, log on mkeairwatershow.com. Save 50%. See the show, the Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach. Save this Friday at 8 a.m. at wauk.halfoffdeal.com. That's wauk.halfoffdeal.com.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Listen to this mission. Highlight ag research from the university, showcase education, and show off new technology. Written almost 70 years ago, it's still what you'll find at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. This year's show includes hot tech like drones, food grown across the state, and how it all impacts our economy. Sauk County is your Farm Technology Days host at the Badger Steam and Gas Engine Club in Baraboo, July 18th through 20th. Details at wifarmtechdays.org. I'm Terry.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support.
For a free estimate or more information on our financing, call 612-333-SNAP or check us out online.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Clear tonight with a low of 58, then more sunshine Tuesday with a high of 83. Fill the hot summer nights with the hottest music in the Twin Cities at Crooner Supper Club in Fridley. Crooners is located just north of I-694 off Highway 65. View their schedules and food menus at croonersloungemn.com.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Minnesota 350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. Before we get back to our guest host today with Heather Keeler, we're going to take a quick listen to Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan's newest update from the Capitol.
Anim Bujou, this is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I'm joining Native Roots Radio with an update from the Walz Flanagan administration. On July 1st, many of the incredible accomplishments we made last legislative session went into effect. Free breakfast and lunch for K-12 students in summer academic programs. And this fall, K-12 students across the state and participating schools will also have access to free breakfast and lunch at school. No questions asked, no stigma. Believe me, as a parent of a rising fifth grader, there are a lot of hot lunches in my daughter's future. Our budget also has big investments in K-12 education for the next 2 years, or biennium in legislative speak, including tying education funding to inflation beginning in 2026. Another big investment for Native students includes increased funding for American Indian Education Aid and new restrictions on its uses to make sure that all of the funding gets to Native students without being used for other purposes. And on July 1st, new funding for the Native Language Revitalization classes in public schools came into effect. Soon, it will be much easier for Native students to learn their languages in Minnesota. Our budget also increased investments in health equity for communities disproportionately impacted by health inequities, including Native communities and communities of color. We established the Office of American Indian Health at the Minnesota Department of Health and funded the Native American Elders Coordinator position at the Department of Human Services. We permanently funded traditional healing grants for substance use disorders and expanded access to culturally specific substance use services. And we're starting to see money get into communities through our Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program. And in the coming months, new first-time homebuyer programs will launch and be available throughout the state. Increased investments to assist local governments and administer elections. We established the Digital Fair Repair Act, which requires technology manufacturers to continue providing the parts and equipment to maintain and repair digital equipment. And we increased investments and new programs to bolster economic opportunity, including the Minnesota Forward Fund, the Climate Innovation Finance Authority, and the Small Business Assistance Partnerships Programs and Launch Minnesota. And we provided $50 million in workforce training grants to help organizations providing job skills and trainings for hiring support for people of color and Native folks. There's still a lot of changes and implementation on the horizon, and more new programs and laws will go into effect on August 1st, including the legalization of adult-use cannabis. So whether I'm dipping dilly bars in Moorhead or visiting a dairy farm in Carver County, I'm excited to continue highlighting the great work that's happening in Minnesota, across the state, and across the country. Chi-mi-gwich, pina-gigi, and back to you.
Wow, thank you, Peggy, so much. Pina Gigi, we appreciate all that you do here at Native Roots Radio and for our communities. And with that being said, back to you, State Representative Heather Keeler.
I love that she highlighted the fact that when she was in Moorhead, she was dipping dilly bars, because Moorhead, which is the district that I represent, is the home of the dilly bars. So that's great. And it's also great, like, for us to follow up, because now for the last half of the show, I have the honor to be joined with Representative Jamie Becker Finn. One of the coolest parts about serving in Minnesota is that we have a Native American Legislative Caucus. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But first, welcome to the show, Jamie. I'm so glad you could join us.
Yeah, bujou. Get to follow up Peggy, though.
I know. It's like she kind of, yeah, I mean, right? It's like a beautiful reunion. We were just up in Red Lake on the 4th of July all together. And we kind of laughed because there's five of us as Indigenous people who serve in the state of Minnesota. Jamie, do you want to walk us through who they are and kind of what roles they play?
Yeah, well, so I'm one of them. So Jamie Becker Finn, I represent suburban Ramsey County area. I'm Leech Lake Ojibwe, grew up on the res, still go back home quite often. And then we've got Heather here representing the Moorhead area, Representative Leech Kozlowski from Duluth, and then Senator Kunish. We only have one Native senator, Senator Kunish, who also Ramsey County suburbs. And then we have Peggy, who's a former legislator and our partner in the executive branch in our legislative work.
Yeah, which is so cool because for those of you who are kind of legislative nerds, maybe, is that really the Native American Caucus, for what I think is probably the first time, holds a lot of power in the decision-making because we sit at these tables, because we're in very slim majorities. And so you really have to get our caucus, you know, on board for things. But we've also been able to do a lot of education, you know, to the other members. But I still feel very new to this role. And I know, Jamie is actually the chair of judiciary. And so she's chair Becker Finn, you know, when we're in these spaces, but that took time. And so talk a little bit about, you know, the growth that you've seen from when you first got elected and where we are now in that power structure and how our voices really matter in this system.
Yeah, so when I was first elected, so I'm in my fourth term now. And when I still remember, I always tell people this story. I still remember my very first day of committee. And, you know, I thought like the Environment and Natural Resources Committee was like, why wouldn't everybody want to be on that committee? It's so important in our hunting and our fishing and, you know, protecting Mother Earth. Like, of course, like, it's not that as popular among legislators. And I walked in that room the very first day and there were no BIPOC people in the room at all. I was the only Indigenous person, and I was probably the youngest person by at least 15, maybe 20 years. So, and that included the people in the audience, like even the lobbyists, like in that room that day, were all like skewed, not very diverse. And for a second, I sort of was like, oh God, like what am I? I felt really small. And then I realized like that's why I'm here. I'm here because I need to be here, because otherwise nobody's going to say these things that need to be said. Nobody's going to ask, you know, what do the tribes think? Nobody's going to point out that, you know, our animals and our fish and our, you know, I mean, we call it, it's a part of natural resources, as if they're just there for us to take from. And you know, my perspective has always been really different. And, where we've come since then is like, I was in the minority my first term. So I like my role was just like a first term person in the minority. And my role was just to like be as annoying as possible. But I was like, every single bill was like, what do the tribes think of this? No, it isn't okay to just email some guy and tell me that you've like, you know, that's interacting with the tribes, you know, like that's right. That government to government communication. So like for where we are now to where we were then, you know, now it's the Native Caucus is known, it is recognized, people know to come talk to us about things ahead of time to get our perspectives. The agencies know that our voices are really important. And then we have, you know, at the time, Peggy was also a minority member in the House, in the state House. So to have her now in the governor's office is incredibly important too, where we can really work as partners in that way. So it's definitely different now. We've had two different sovereignty days now under Speaker Hortman to really educate other legislators, educate the public about what sovereignty means. And I think that's been super helpful too, as we move these issues forward.
Yeah, well, and we bring it to light that, you know, sovereignty means it's a government to government relationship. And I think so often it presents itself as like the government is overseeing, you know, our tribal nations. And really it's a partnership. That's what it's designed to be. And so it has been really beautiful, even in just the 3 years that I've been here, to see that expand with Senator Kunish, but she started in the House too. And then now we have Representative Kozlowski with us as well. And so we just keep growing and it matters. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about your role as the chair. And so, you know, some of this is that it takes time, and we've been building this momentum and we've been getting here. And as you've talked about, like, I also joined Environment Natural Resources because we were fighting line three, and I was like, of course, that's where I need to be. And it was actually really aggressive. I mean, that was a really hard place to be. And so knowing that you were there before me, kind of starting these conversations, and then I joined in, and now, you know, we're building the momentum. But as a chair of judiciary, you played a big role in some of our things, especially around like our murdered and missing Indigenous relatives, having a voice at that table. You had the gavel some of the times when we were in conference committee. Talk a little bit about the uniqueness of being a chair and being Indigenous and protecting our tribal nations.
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, the way that the legislature, the power structures and the whole system is built is really who has power. And it's very like, you know, it's not sort of this organic flowing power. It's very like structured and hierarchical, just the way that the structure of the legislature is built. So to have a gavel is, you know, just a type of recognized power that everybody who works the legislature understands. And so, you know, being able to have that power, it means that not only whether they want to or not, and whether they like me or not, they're sort of forced to treat me more respectfully. Because when you're the chair of a committee, if somebody is disrespectful to me, well, I'm not necessarily going to go out of my way to help them get their things done. Or, you know, when we're just trying to schedule all these things and somebody's asked me to do a favor, like, can you reschedule my thing? Like, if you were a jerk to Heather in another committee, or you were really disrespectful to Representative Kozlowski 2 weeks ago, I know. And so, you know, those, when we talk about relationships mattering in the legislature, that's really what we're talking about. So, yeah, it has been really, really cool to be part of the MMIR work from day one, and bringing that, you know, to where we are now as well. So it's very cool.
Yeah, representation matters. And, you know, you're so right, is that often we're able to be spoken to in a certain type of way. And then when you gain that leadership, you know, role, there's just a hierarchy of, you know, respect that we almost like have to earn. And I'm so proud of you. You know, I kind of say this behind the scenes a lot, but I think publicly, you know, as relatives in this work, I am honestly honored to do this work with you. And I'm so proud of you and the way that you have led us in the House on when we should speak up. You know, a lot of us are like, no, they didn't. You know, we're about to go in. And you're like, no, it's fine. Just let it play out. And so you've really been a strong leader for us in that. And so when we come back after the break, we'll get into some more examples, some of the legislation that we've done as a group, but then also some things that you've been able to accomplish individually.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
Attention, Native American community. We've come a long way in our fight against COVID-19. The emergency declaration may be over, but our responsibility to stay vigilant remains. It is crucial to remember that the virus is still among us, and we must continue to prioritize our health and the well-being of our loved ones and elders. Besides getting vaccinated, let's not forget the basics when we're around people who are still vulnerable to COVID-19. Wear your mask, wash your hands regularly, and take an at-home COVID-19 test if you have any symptoms. We've shown incredible strength and resilience throughout history, and we will triumph over this challenge as well. Let's honor our ancestors by taking care of one another and keeping our communities safe. Together, let's navigate uncertain times with courage and unity. Stay informed, stay safe, and remember that our actions today will shape a brighter future for our Native community. Find more tips on continuing to be safe at health.state.mn.us.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. How? Wow, the lone wolf today, you guys. Thank you.
I didn't know the deal. Sorry.
I was even saying, like, we need to have Chair Becker Finn Howell in, and then I forgot to tell you that. All right, well, it's Heather Keeler taking over for Robert, and I'm here with Representative Chair Becker Finn. So let's talk a little bit about the Native American Legislative Caucus and how, you know, we were able to get things done. I think a lot of people talk about the trifecta and these things that the DFL, you know, and the Democrats got done. But to be quite honest, I am extremely proud of the work that we did as our caucus. And one of the highlights out of many was the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act and what we did in Minnesota to make sure that our Indigenous kids were protected as ICWA was being challenged at the federal level. And it was emotional. It was one of the most emotional roller coasters I've ever been on. I was licensed ICWA for a long time. And I can tell you, being in those trenches emotionally with you and with Kozlowski was extremely meaningful. And talk us through kind of, we had a real clear message that this was not one individual's bill, that the three of us were authors, and how kind of unique that was. And then having you be the chair through that, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think the way that things have typically been done at the legislature is that everything's like super ego driven and everything's sort of about the one chief author, and people are just so used to that, which means that usually they're used to pitting people against each other. If, you know, well, maybe that person wants more attention than the other person, or, you know, and people will use that against legislators who might even are supposed to be on the same team. But the unique thing with this bill is that none of us came at this work in that way, you and mm-hmm. Representative Kozlowski and myself. And so I think, like, it was, I think, honestly, jarring for some people, but really emotional for some people. It's not... The thing that happened a lot this session that has not happened in past sessions is, like, when that final vote would go up on the board, we would physically go be in space together and, you know, to be hugging and, in, you know, instead of sort of this hyper formal, like, you know, just counting the numbers, I won kind of thing. And that's just not how any of us operate as individuals or as a group. And so I also thought this session was really special, not just because of the trifecta, but because the three of us have really been able to work in a really, like, real way where we actually care about each other and care about the outcomes instead of caring about, like, who gets credit or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. So I think it has been a really cool experience, you know, whether it's MIFPA or, you know, lots of other things in other spaces too, where we were also able to kind of tag team between the different committees that we were on, so we could cover more ground and then regroup and still have each other's backs, even when we weren't physically always in the same place.
Yeah, that was really amazing. And I'm not a big hugger. That's not a surprise to people. But honestly, one of the best hugs that I've ever experienced was on the House floor after we passed MIFPA. And we did. And it was, our relatives were there. There were people from all over the state that, again, like, this just isn't a place that Indigenous people maybe show up or have reasons to show up to celebrate particularly. And I remember after that, we started getting warnings, like, wait until we gavel out before we could celebrate, because we really just went nuts in that place. But it was so beautiful. But you're right. And so when we presented the bill, typically what happens, and this is just an education point for people, is that it's there's one author of the bill, and then there's co-authors that sign on in support of that bill. But it's really the author that shows up and presents the bill to the committees. And in our first hearing, the three of us showed up and sat at the table very intentionally together as the three lead authors of that. And then at the end, when we sent it to the floor after it went through the Senate, we were very intentional working there that Chair Becker Finn, Chair of Judiciary, you know, played a big part in being able to be the chair to send that to the House floor. And I'm trying to like not get emotional in it, but, you know, that's what representation means. And I think the creator did a lot of work leading up to this point for us to be in these positions. And Peggy came and sat on the House floor with us. Mary left the Senate and came over. And for maybe 5 minutes, all five of us were on the House floor for this exact reason together. And I think that was really beautiful. And we did a lot of other work, and we can come back another day, you know, to talk about all of the things. But let's talk a little bit about in judiciary, particularly the law, some of the law enforcement piece. We did a lot with EMS. You kind of say like, you know, we had to kind of save some of the tourists out on tribal lands because we have such beautiful spaces sometimes. But talk us through a little bit about those specific things that went through your jurisdiction, your committee.
Yeah, well, so I serve on the Judiciary Committee. I'm the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and then I also sit on the Public Safety Committee, and I'm the only Indigenous person on that committee as well. And then those bills get those committees get combined at the end, so we're like in that final negotiation together. So the one that I'm the most proud of that I've been working on really the whole time I've been here is the Tribal Law Enforcement Jurisdiction Bill, which is, again, to speak of how far we've come of like when I first introduced that bill, and all it does is treat licensed peace officers who work for our tribal nations, gives those tribal law enforcement officers the same authority as anyone, any other licensed peace officer to enforce the law. Like, it really shouldn't be that big of a deal, but it was like they couldn't even hold in the terrible things they would think, you know, like assuming that our governments are not as well run as like a township or, you know, or a county or things like that. And so to go from that to like, we got to a point this year where it wasn't even really that controversial. It was sort of like, well, of course we would want tribal nations to be able to enforce the law. So Leech Lake in particular, where I'm from and the community I'm from, I was very familiar with what that meant for our community. So getting that done was super important. And then you mentioned the tourists. So Grand Portage, you know, they're way up there. And the Coast Guard sort of pulled back from some of the work they'd been doing on Lake Superior. You know, when folks who maybe don't respect Lake Superior to the degree that they should get themselves into situations. So we were able to get some funding so that Grand Portage can have an emergency manager and have the equipment they need to take care of their people. But also if there's any other folks, you know, it's not usually our people on the wrong kind of boat on Lake Superior on a bad day. So, but yeah, keeping everybody safe.
Yeah. I mean, but those are the things that, like you said, over time, these conversations go from like, absolutely not to like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But that's because people like you have been there. People like Susan Allen were there, you know, educating really along the path very, very intentionally. Because I want to just remind everybody, as I know that you mentioned where we all serve, none of the Indigenous people elected officials in Minnesota actually live and represent like a Native nation. So we're showing up as elected officials for our own communities and for our tribal communities. And so, you know, I appreciate and I see you for that. Lastly, I know we have a minute left, but you know, generationally, also your dad served in this space. And one of the memories that I have, because I serve on the Human Services, was the Board of Aging Native Americans and the role that was, you know, your dad's bill, and you were able to bring that to the floor. So real quick, as we wrap up, you know, the generational impact and how that plays a role, and then our kids are playing on the front lawn, but like, talk us through that as being one of those final moments.
Yeah, well, so my dad had, back in the 90s, had got this elders position in the Board of Aging passed, but nobody ever funded it. And so 30 years later, we finally, with the three of us here in the house, were able to bring that forward and get the funding. And so
it's time to turn Fridays into Fri-yays with WAUK.halfoffdeal.com. You'll find deals for spots around town like restaurants, spas, and events. This Friday at 8 a.m., you'll save 50% on tickets to the Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach. That's right, save 50% on tickets for this year's Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd. The Milwaukee Air and Water Show continues to be Wisconsin's premier free family event of the summer and one of the top air shows in the Midwest. Gates open up at 9 a.m. both days. Have a splash with the water show from 10 to 11:30. Be amazed with the air show at 12 p.m. and witness the Blue Angels around 3 p.m. For more details about the event, log on mkeairwatershow.com. Save 50%. See the show, the Milwaukee Air and Water Show, July 22nd and 23rd on the lakefront at Bradford Beach. Save this Friday at 8 a.m. at WAUK.halfoffdeal.com. That's WAUK.halfoffdeal.com.